Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show, our own internet radio program at BBS Radio every Friday evening at 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2, featuring a variety of subjects and special guests each week from all over. And live from the CHIF Métis Museum in beautiful Vavenby, B.C., Canada, with your host, Gail Haggerty. Call-in lines are now open, as well as a chat feature for your questions and comments. Here are the numbers to call. In the U.S. and Canada, toll-free 888-228-4494. And worldwide, toll-free 877-489-6350. For direct lines, go to www.bbsradio.com, BBS Station 2 on the right-hand side. And don't worry if you miss any of these call-in numbers. They are posted on the BBS Radio website. And those who wish to enter the BBS Live chat rooms, please go to the homepage of BBS Radio on the column on the left. Scroll down and click into How to Listen. Then scroll down to Chat Live, BBS My Chat Rooms. Click in, choose the drop-down menu, select the chat room, Chatter Hall, sign in if already registered or register if you're not. Now, introducing your host, Dale Haggerty.
Tansi, everyone. Welcome this Friday, July 4th, our American Cousins Independence Day, to our Métis Voices radio program. Ka-choo! Is it hot up here in Vavenby land? Tonight, second program in the Residential School series. The first program aired on BBS Radio Tuesday, June 24th on Between Two Worlds. I have the privilege to introduce to you as my guest and the host of Between Two Worlds, our good friend, Elder Métis Brother Derek White Skycloud, Cultural Director of the Métis Métis Museum, as well as a counselor of the Residential School Recovery Program. Welcome to our show, Derek.
Tansi.
Derek, I would like you to continue with the subject of the residential schools in our second program of this series. Tell us about your work. Tell us about your work as a volunteer counselor for the residential recovery program, and what exactly will you be doing as a counselor?
Well, the work is that I work for the Indian Residential School Survivor Society as a volunteer. I was asked by a lady who works as a team leader. Her name is Maxine Windsor, the AHF team. She actually was the elder support coordinator. She called me about a few weeks back and asked to come and see me in person. And this is just actually, I met her at a powwow, I believe. And she asked me if I would be interested in being involved with the Aboriginal Residential School Recovery Survivor Society. And I said, well, let's talk about it, I guess. And because I was just telling her my story, what I went through when I was a kid. And we actually had a talk, discussion, and she invited me up to the elders' meeting they had for a two-day workshop to chat with us and see how we would feel regarding to be involved in all their communities. We had elders come in from all over British Columbia. It wasn't just your typical, you know, gathering of local people. This is from all over. And we had people from Saskatchewan, Alberta, Manitoba, British Columbia, and these are elders in different territories. And I'm hoping that those elders out there are actually listening in, because we're asking that they can phone in and tell us their story. I did talk to Maxine Windsor just a few hours back and told her that we're doing this program, and she's looking forward to listening in, as well as I'm hoping that she'll phone in and tell us her story regarding also the program. But what this purpose of this help, what this program is about, is to help people that are going through survival of residential schools. And, you know, in a way, people used to turn to psychologists and psychiatrists, and for some reason, the program is not working because of being Aboriginal people. We're not your typical non-native way of going by points and numbers and say if you were, if you're going a little crazy, or if you're having depression, or if you're having feelings of wanting to commit suicide, or having feelings of wanting to do drugs or alcohol, or whether they go through sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, all this actually did take place by other different individuals. It's not just every school that everyone went through the same thing. Every individual went through a different type of deep programming by whether it's a Catholic Church, an Anglican Church, Unity Church, whether it was whichever area that they were from. Each one went through different versions of abuse. And I've met many people through my years of work that have told me their stories. And even recently, since we had the apology from our Prime Minister of Canada, Premier Harper, who actually stated that for he representing Canada, that he wants to apologize. A lot of people out there, even to this day, don't even know that the apology actually has been done on television or radio, because a lot of people I've spoken to never even knew that it did exist. Some of them live on reservations that don't have televisions and radios. So it'll take them years before they really actually recognize the fact that this apology did take place. And there are people out there, even to this day, that have not been accepted as being part of residential school or recognized because they've lost their files through some of the residential schools that have been destroyed. So, you know, you got to take their word for it that they went through it, whether it's a grandparent, whether it's an uncle, auntie, a mother, father, cousins. And some of them actually have been abused through the family members, or other people within the communities have dealt with abuse because it's actually generational. And we're trying to break that generation and to bring peace in themselves, in ourselves, and to help each our traditional ways and bring back our power, take back our own medicine.
Yeah. Eric, I've even understand that that there's quite a few that are actually in the prison system, and they don't even realize this is really going on right now, and that they've been so deprogrammed that and they're out of touch of the society. Is there going to be anything done to to try to reach these people in the prison?
Well, what I understand right now, we do have some elders that do come into prison systems and share their stories, or they help with our brothers and sisters that are lost inside. Just recently, they have been setting up sweat lodges now in some of the prisons, not all of them, and it's going to take time for that to come around. But sometimes, like I used to work at Surrey Pretrial, and as a when I used to work for Métis Family Services, and I was asked to come in as a Métis elder to work with the Métis men that were actually imprisoned, and I would represent them even in court as their counselor, and even to help them with their journey, and I would help them with to help them take back their power and to make them feel that they're worthy. And these men have said to me after, once they've gone through their talk with me and spending time with me, they felt much better. They felt stronger. And this is a thing that we don't have out there, are a lot of support. We just need that support from our community, and sometimes some of our community does not want to talk about it because they hide away that shame, and we're trying to bring that, take that shame away from them, because we've been told this and brainwashed and even people that are Métis, being Métis, you're caught between both worlds because you're living the white man's life, but you're also living the native life. You know, but we take pride in both sides. But having to even take that too, because, you know, whether you look like you're a native, some people say you don't look Métis, some people, well, depending where you are, because a lot of us actually lived on reservations, some of us did not. Some of us were just urbanized, living in the cities, but we're still affected by this, whether it's drug and alcohol abuse, we're still affected by it because we watch our parents, our grandparents go through their pain, their emotions, and a lot of times some of them actually go through, they don't realize that they're going through their own pains. I could tell you so many stories that would just, they're mind-boggling.
Oh, yeah. This is a new position for you, and have you had a chance yet to help any of the residential survivors?
Yes, I have. When we had the apology that afternoon, June the 1st of 2008, when we had that apology, I was busy. I was running my feet off trying to help whoever was needing my help. We have a lot of volunteers with the IRSSS program, and we try our best to help others. And like I said, I'm a volunteer and learning these skills of what I've got the knowledge I do have the profession as a counselor. I've been doing this a lot of years, around 20 years now. As a profession, and in my field, besides just dealing with residential school programming, my background, I also work as a psychic medium, but I also work as a culture director with the Nechist Métis Preservation and Culture Society. I do all types of work. I travel all over northern Alberta when I'm asked to come up there to do diabetes conferences and doing HIV conferences. Doing drug and alcohol programs and teaching the medicine wheel programming to heal. There's so much that I do. I mean, you somehow spread yourself around. I mean, I'm positive if I had eight arms, I'd be wanted everywhere. And I used to work at some of the centers up in northern British Columbia. I worked at a place called Wilpisset Healing Center about 12 years ago. I was there as a volunteer for about 3.5 months. I worked with some good friends that invited me there. And I was working with the people that are going through drug and alcohol recovery for those 6 weeks in the program. There have been a lot of new things now that I'm sure the program has improved a great deal with all these other centers that we are dealing with. And I've also been asked to come up to Regina in August for a week to do a workshop training regarding the residential school program. So. Something I'm thinking about to do as well.
Oh, so that sounds really good. So, yeah.
But I want to say, yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's what I want you to say.
When I was at our meeting, our 2-day workshop, and when you gave me your letter, what your mom had wrote. This I did not tell you. But when they asked all of us to share what we want to share in our inner circle and how we are feeling and regarding the residential school, each of us passed our eagle feather. We did not have an eagle feather, so we represented it as a carrying on, holding on to one of the drumsticks, which anything is like a talking stick. And each of us share from our heart how we felt and what we need to share to help inspire this organization to help the Elder Support Committee program. We were trying to give a lot of great ideas to help create that strength. When it came to me, I stood up from the chair, I took your letter, and I read it out loud, and I shared it with all the elders in this room. And after I had spoken and finished, the elders asked me for copies of that letter so they can share that same letter across their territories. And they take that letter with them. And they're going to be heard. Your mom is going to be heard.
Wow. Thanks, Derek. It's like, you know, I'm still trying to, you know, understand why, you know, things happen that way, you know, and, you know, like I said, I'm still dealing with family dysfunctions that's happening in my life, and, you know, I've always tried to say, you know, pass the buck here, but, you know, to forgive and forgive and forget, you know, sort of thing. But, you know, when I quit drinking, you know, it seems when I was drinking, I could possibly do that. But now that I'm been sober for 10 years and realizing the backlash that it had affected me, you know, it still bothers me today. And I the funny thing is that I am up here in a counselor and looking for counseling, and there's nothing to be offered. I mean, you know, I know that they're going to try to put things going, but, you know, what is there? You know what I'm saying? Who do you talk to? The only one I've been really talking to is you, and, you know, and I talk to you as my counselor, sort of thing. So, anyways, that's my views about it, you know. So
this program.
Oh, I really appreciate you doing all the stuff that you're doing at your end. So I
understand that this program is new, and so it's they're trying to get it off the ground. And I mean, the federal government actually is recognizing what we're doing. Our provincial government should recognize what we're doing, but it's going to take time. And you know, it took them 150 years to try to take the Indian out of us, and they still haven't. Because we're fighting back. We fought back, and we're making sure that we're recognized as who we are and take great pride of who we are. Whether we are First Nations, whether we're Inuit, whether we're Métis, we're taking back our power. And it happens to even Aborigines in New Zealand and Australia. It happened to people that are African-American in Africa. They lost that pride of who they were because of whether it was church society or white man society. But again, it happens all across the world. So basically what we've got to try and do is band together and to stay strong together and help each support each other. And even if that person's and it is allowing him or herself to be the only individual walking, we need to be there for them so then they don't fall. And that's basically what our job is. And yes, we have lost a lot of good brothers and sisters out there that have felt that they're not worthy of themselves or felt that they can't live anymore, or they felt that they've got to drink, or they felt they got to do drugs because it kills the pain. It's only temporary. You don't have a life. And a lot of people have been urbanized to live in the streets and being poor. I'm also working as one of our spiritual churches. I'm actually a minister in training. And we work, Reverend Bob Leonard and myself, we work with the homeless in this program and trying to get people from the streets into a home of their own so they can actually be have a life of their own and take back their pride of who they are. And whether they're native or non-native, it is all over. We do have these degrees of issues that happens to everyone. And so my job is to be there when they need me. And be there when we're needed, you know. And so, like Maxine told me, if there's a Métis who needs my help, they'll call me, and I'm there. That's my job, and because I care. And there's more of our brothers and sisters that we need that strength. We need that support. And if there's anyone ever out there that said that they have been recipient for residential school, and yet they're the best counselors because those ones that are going through the healing process are the best counselors. Not everybody heals completely and say, here, I'm healed, and I'll, you know, like as if you're going to church and some priest shows up, walks up to you and says, heal you, And you're never going to feel this feeling ever again. I'm telling you, it stays with you for a while, and it takes a lot of years. I mean, my wife and I talked about some of the pains that I went through when I was a kid, being locked up in the church in a room, a little tiny room. If I wasn't told to do what I was supposed to do by the priest or whoever she was, they'd lock me in a room. And why? I didn't know why. All I kept hearing was, I'm the heathen. Well, that's their problem. I can't do anything about it. That's their issues. They have to deal with it. You know, but I can't tell anyone ever again. No one can, to get over it. It doesn't. You can't always get over it all the time. It takes time. You can forgive, but you can never forget.
Who actually has initiated this program that you're on? Is it done through the federal government, or is it done through the...
I'm not too sure. I'm hoping that they do call in, but I believe it's through... You know what? I'm not too sure. I can't quote that. I don't know who it's under. But actually, they do have a website, and it's... I'll give you the website. It's www.irsss.ca. That's irsss.ca. That's their website, and if you don't have a website... availability to go there. They do have a phone number, and their phone number is toll-free. It's 1-800-721-0066. That's 1-800-721-0066. And you can ask for our elder support coordinator, which is Maxine Windsor. And she's the team leader.
Derek, what do you think? If this program was initiated by our federal government, is any of our political leaders, are they involved? Are they trying to push programs and push the dollars towards the programs, or have they not even come to the plate? Because as far as that's the impression that I'm getting from, you know, it's okay to accept the apology and then get your back patted, but now it's time to initiate some of these programs. Has any of our political leaders come to the plate and started doing something about it?
Well, what I understand, I think this program is run by Health Canada. So I think it's based on, you know, again, they call it a health issue. I'm just going to get my files out here. They call it the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And, let's see here now. Now, we do have our politicians are involved. We have our Justice Harry S. LaForme, who's the chair. He's up, and actually he's Mississauga Indian, a member of the Mississauga of the New Credit First Nation located in southern Ontario. And we also have also Jane Morley, QC commissioner. She's a lawyer and facilitator and a mediator, an arbitrator, and a public policy advisor, helping the residents of school program as well, recovery program. And we also have Claudette Dumont-Smith, commissioner. And Claudette Dumont-Smith is from the First Nations Algonquin community of Kitigan, Zibi, near Maniwaki, Quebec. Under her appointment as a commissioner to the Indian Residential Schools Truth and Reconciliation Commission, on May the 13th, 2008, she was a senior health advisor to the Native Women's Association of Canada. So we do have, I would say, what I understand, we do have three. If you actually went to the website of Indian Residential Schools Truth and Reconciliation Commission, you will see all these politicians that are involved. That's the Indian Residential Schools Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And you look under the media room, and that'll tell you who's involved and what their mandate is. I feel that they're, like I said, it's a stepping stone for us. We're trying to make it better for everyone. What I want to do, not just me alone, I mean, I want to share this with the rest of the radio show. These are the elders that were asked to come out that are also part of this program. And I want to name these elders. I'll just name them as one is Daisy Hill from Campbell River, B.C. David Williams from Cranbrook, B.C. Brenda F. Wesley from Vancouver. Sadie Howard from South Hazleton, B.C. Betsy Dennis from Fort St. James, B.C. Margot Sagalon, Fort St. James. Fred John from Vancouver. Ben David from Port Alberni. Stylus from Cornell. Laurel McDonald from Surrey. And Maxine Windsor from West Vancouver. These are the elders that are working in this volunteering program, that's not all of them. There's more. I mean, we're just the volunteers. That doesn't count the people that are actually working for the IRSSS. So there's quite a few, and when I got out of this meeting, I felt that there's a lot there that was going to help. And I really strongly it will help a lot more people in our community. I just feel that we got something that we can do. And there's always a need for more people to help assist us. You know, we just can't always just do this alone.
But what you're saying here, Derek, is if you need volunteers to get a hold of, is it Maxine?
Maxine Windsor, yes.
Maxine Windsor, she is the coordinator, is she?
Yeah, she is the team leader for the AHF, the Elder Support Coordinator. Wonderful woman. We enjoy our talks together.
Yeah.
I even asked her. I said, you know, why did you guys choose me? You know, like there's other people that went through residential school recovery. Residential school far more dramatic than I have, and she basically stated to everyone, we searched around and amongst the community of all the communities, they said we chose you. You were important to us. We feel that you will benefit everyone in this work, and I was quite honored. I never expected to receive such a huge honor this way.
Yeah, I was quite proud when you had phoned me, Derek, and told me the good news that they have elected you. I felt that you have the wisdom and the knowledge that you can help the people out there that need the services and the talking and to bring out some of these stories that Derek, you also, like I said, you also have experienced your own experience. Did you have a chance to get out there and tell people what your stories were about? And could you fathom I know that you went through it, but did you understand what was going on? What was going through your mind when this stuff was happening to you?
Well, when I was a kid, it was strange because, I mean, I thought I was just a regular white kid in the community living a, you know, just common life. And I would say I was 12 years old. And I was going through my grandfather's chest, his storage chest. He passed away, and he gave that chest to my mom, and mom had all of his documents and stuff. And mom just, you know, the family never paid attention to it until I decided to look it up, or basically look in the chest, and I found my grandfather's leather bundle. And so I opened it up and looked inside, and I found his documents. And it basically, I found history from his family that relates, refers back to Pocahontas, which we are related to Rebecca Rolfe, who is Mataqua of the Powhatan Nation, Algonquin. And how I found this, or how I how my grandfather knew of it or had possession of this, he was applying for his pension. And in back in the early 1960s, a lot of times the government, your provincial federal government won't, did not have no intention to help you to find out who you belong to. And basically, if you're connected to the Queen, and like basically where Canada is actually we're connected to the UK. So the provincial or federal government told her, told my grandfather that he had to write to the British Commonwealth to apply for information regarding his family, so then they can prove that he can actually receive pension and all this, and being a proof of being Canada and the whole nine yards. And so I guess he sent the letter out. Well, 6 months later, he got the letter back, and it stated, "Mr. Rolfe, you are related to so-and-so, so-and-so." And then I thought it was pretty cool. I was pretty excited, and I told my mother and showed her the documents, and she didn't even know. All the time, the years, and my mom never even seen the letter. My grandfather, I guess, kept it quiet. And so I'm going to school, telling all my friends in school, hey, you know, well, I thought friends, telling them, hey, I got Indian blood in me. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was a really good thing. And next thing you know, I got beat up and fights, and oh, yeah, it was like major stuff. And so I guess one of the teachers got a hold of me and heard the rumor going around the schoolyard, asking if I got native blood, and I said, yeah, I do. How do you know that? And I got, and do you have proof? And I said, yeah, I got my grandfather's documents. So they called my mother, and my mother came to the school, and the next thing you know, I was taken out of this school and moved to another school, which is probably a residential school area up in Brandon, Manitoba.
Yeah, well,
and... Sorry?
Eric, what was going through your parents' minds? I mean, why are they doing this? Did they give any explanation, or was it just...
My mom, I asked my mom why. I was an A and B student, and mom said to me that they were sending me to a special school. She never explained to me why. She said, I'm going to a special school. So I thought I was special. And when I got there, I've never seen so many kids that were so depressed. It was horrible. But you know what? When I got there, I started making friends, and I couldn't believe I had so many friends in school. I used to go to school with the Hools and McLeans. So many kids I used to know back then. And, you know, we also had our fun. You know, you're just a kid. You're 13. You're just turned 13. They're just having our fun. And a lot of the kids played hooky, and those words, hooky, didn't work out well, because if you disappeared, they sent out a truant officer to find you, and you weren't returned back to the school. You're thrown in jail overnight. And then, you know, your parents couldn't take you home. You had to stay in that jail overnight, and because they wanted to put the scare in you. But, you know, today... If a 13-year-old got caught, they're not sent to jail. They're sent home to the parents. And slapping the hands, don't do it again. But we went through our truant officers, and truant officers always look as if they're dressed in black. They look like, you know, we used to always say, you know, people used to talk about the men in black. Well, these guys wore hats and not sunglasses, just mean-looking, clean-shaven, trench coats, and they grab you by the collar, you know, behind your neck, and give your neck a good squeeze, and then, you know, you just knew you were hurting, and they got away with it, and sent you back. And once you got out of jail, they let you go the next morning, and they send you right back to the same school, drop you back off in school, and then you go home, and then not me, but some of the parents who beat up their own kids, or they smacked their kids around or gave them spanking. I'm not sure they did do, but most of the kids got beaten badly because the parents were embarrassed the fact their kid went to jail. And, but the kids, you know, didn't want to go to school. You know, it was not always fun. They tried to make it fun, but we didn't like it. Some of us didn't like it. And a lot of the kids didn't even sleep in class. Literally, we had one kid I remember so well that he actually sleep on his desk. He couldn't even keep his eyes open. Because they had him working. He was working in the fields at nighttime. And by the time he got to school, he was actually sleeping on his desk. It was, I couldn't believe it.
I was going to say that I had the experience with me and Dale. I had to go to a board development class in Cranbrook, and of course they had a large residential school there, and now they've turned it into a hotel resort. And you know, and Dale and I were walking down the halls, and of course, you know, me being very spiritual and feeling things happening around me, I said to Dale, I says, I got a funny feeling that there's somebody's watching me and following me. Dale says, of course, Dale is my wife, and she's very psychic, and she said, yeah, it's the kids that were in here. And I says, oh, it's so that's what it was, and it's their spirits that are still in that school that really affected me. And eventually that the next day that we'd had a chance, and they opened a museum so we could listen to the stories of the school survivors, and we were quite upset and shocked. It put us into a world of dismay, and then the reflection of it happening to my own family, I just never thought of it. And I guess ever since that happened, it's been put into my vault in my heart, and you know, and now it's coming out, and it's found the combination to open the doors, and now I can talk about this stuff because it's been in my heart and in the vault, and I can't release it. But now that it's all out in the open, now I can start talking, and I don't accept apology. Not until I see programs that are happening. I think, you know, that my personal experiences, until people I can actually see walking and saying, you know, that I was a residential survivor and I am finally getting some help that's needed. Oh, we have a caller, Derek. Just hello, welcome to the show. Your name is?
Tansi,
who's this?
It's Joanne from Winnipeg.
Hi, Joanne. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Derek a question.
You betcha. Derek?
Yeah?
When we were talking on Tuesday, you remember you telling me that I should go to see if my grandmother's name was registered in one of the schools. Now, how would I go about doing that?
What you can do is look on the, you go on the internet and look under residential schools, listings. In fact, Dale knows all that too, because he's been doing the research for his mom. It helps you, find out if your grandmother's a survivor, because I'm sure she was. Because you remember you telling me that she was telling her stories of what she went through. And a lot of, again, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I did go on the sites, on quite a few sites, and I couldn't find anything there on finding survivors' names or anything. So
yeah, there. Tell you the truth, Joanne. Sorry, Derek. There is no names. What they do is they do not want to release the names because they don't want to open the can of worms, and that's basically what the problem is. They have the files, they have the documents, they know who was at the schools, and if they can keep saying to the public, saying, well, they got lost and they got thrown into the fire or they didn't keep files, I don't believe that. That's they've been keeping Canada's files, have been kept since the 1600s, and they can't deny this. So,
yeah, exactly.
But, sorry, Joanne, the only thing that I can say that there is a number, there is a lady apparently that she is in Kitchener-Waterloo, and she you can actually try to phone her, and she might be able to help you to find the names if you actually know what school she went to or give her some idea.
Yeah, that's the problem though. Grandma never talked about going to school. All I know is she went to grade 3, and the only way I'm presuming she was in residential school was because we were talking about the long hair. She was combing my long hair one day, and she said that she had long, beautiful hair at one time, and she said that her mother became very angry when the nuns cut it right up to her ears. So that makes me think that she was
that's
in residential school.
That is. That's what they would do. You were not allowed to have long hair when she went to residential school. They cut your hair because they were taking the red out of you. That was their way of intimidation, take your power away from you.
Yeah. So go ahead.
One thing I've learned, my wife does a lot of history readings, and she can tell you this, to vouch for this. A lot of the churches are or were always totally responsible for registering every human being in their community. Then they have to send that registry to Ottawa, and Ottawa has, because it basically considers a census, they send to Ottawa. Ottawa has the letters. They have the registries. They have the census. They cannot just say, well, Indian number one, Indian number two. They all had a name.
Yeah.
So, and especially what location they were from, they all had that. I know it because I was told that. And it's a known fact. The only thing is, what you may have to do is some deeper information, research.
Searching.
I'm positive you'll find it. If you, all you have to do is write your grandmother's name down, find out what territory she was going to for a living, if there was a reservation or if there was a Métis settlement, where she was, and look for those local areas, and then contact or write to your parliament and find out where the registry is that you're given permission, because your grandmother's passed away, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically now you want to find out if your grandmother was part of the residential school. And I got a funny feeling they're going to turn around and say, no, she wasn't here because the school never existed, which is crap. I'm sorry, but this is what's happening. They're trying to eliminate any more history that exists regarding residential schools.
Yeah. Well, she was born in the St. Rose du Lac area, so that would be Westbourne, wouldn't it?
That would be Westbourne, so you would have to go and find out write down as much as you can or what you can remember, and including from your grandmother's family, any more people that are existing or still living, contact them. And you'll get a lot of answers. Especially a lot of the Catholic churches, were totally responsible. Any church, with Catholic, Anglican, Unitarian, Presbyterian, or Protestant, they were the ones that were responsible for the records of our existence.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know it was Catholic because she did mention, she just mentioned that part about the nuns, and nothing else was ever said. But
exactly.
You know, Joanne, it's very difficult for, it was very difficult for my mom to even talk about stuff like this. And a matter of fact, how it all started was about 8 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, where, you know, she was talking to my sister and she says that, you know, I think I was part of the residential school, but I'm not too sure. You know, like she was used, and this is what they did to the kids. They took their lives and totally disrupted it. You know, like, and of course, my mom was living in Saskatchewan, and all of a sudden she ends up in Manitoba. There's got to be something wrong with this picture, like, you know, and I don't care. And she ends up telling us a little bit. Now she can open up, but, you know, a little. She still does not want to disclose a lot of information to me and stuff like this. So, you know, I have, you know, she's 87 years old. She's living, and there's nobody to talk to about her deals or ordeals. And I don't even know if she ever wants to talk about it. I mean, would you want to talk about something that happened that took your life away? And, you know, it's who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why we were never told we were Métis. The Métis name was never mentioned in our family until one day we were I was playing with a bunch of friends, and they called me DP. Well, to me, DP is somebody who comes over from a different country. Like I was born and raised here in Canada. And so I went to my dad and I said, well, why are they calling us DPs? And he said, well, we're not DPs. He says, we're half-breeds. And so that kind of set me back. And I kind of knew, because, I mean, all my other cousins, you know, looked Aboriginal. And so I went to my grandmother one day and I said, you know, Grandma, Dad says that we're half-breeds. And she goes, well, yeah, we are. And that's the only time it was ever mentioned. It was never mentioned again. Métis was never brought up. You are French and French only. And that was it.
Yeah. Well, or else you call yourself Ukrainian.
Yeah, like
you're either French or they call you, or else you called yourself Ukrainian, one of the two, because you lived in that area.
Yeah, one of the two.
you're actually lucky that your actual... your dad or your mom actually disclosed this information. You know, if to this day, if my uncle didn't die, and I miss him very much, but he was going to take it to the grave with him that he knew what it was. It was our cousins, our first cousins, that disclosed all this information to us, and we didn't know nothing. It was like a total shock, you know, and it blew our minds away when, you know, and the first question was for me to answer was, what's a Métis?
Yeah. Well, you can remember too, guys, that it was against the law to call yourself Métis by the federal government, and the UK actually passed that law back in the mid-1600s. That's why a lot of people never call themselves Métis until they just stood up and said, you know, enough is enough. We want to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know my dad's sisters were in denial right up until about maybe 5 years ago, just before my dad passed away. Or in fact, it was as my dad was passing. The sisters were talking about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, like, oh, right. You know, we've got Aboriginal blood in us, and I'm standing there shocked because they actually admitted to it then, but it was never spoken about, never.
No, but it does bother you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it really does. For the longest time, I didn't feel whole, like I wasn't a person until
no,
I started
and
looking
at I went through that myself. Like, I found out more about my grandmother, which I didn't realize, that she was born Bear River Reserve. She was adopted, and she was used as slave, like a slavery to a farm community or a farmer. And she had to stay with this family until she turned 21, and then she could leave. But that meantime, she was forced labor. This was up in Nova Scotia. Because they were saying, hey, everybody in the Labrador area, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, didn't go to residential schools because there was a lot of slavery there. And they used them as farmers, farm slavery. And yes, they were educated, but a farm slavery education. And they learned different language. You didn't learn your own language. You weren't allowed to.
No.
So my grandmother was forced to be adopted to their family name. Like even my grandmother's is a Jesse Chapman, but she was forced to take their last name, which was, I forgot. But somebody's family name. And yet I found a new cousin from Eastern Ontario that actually is from a very similar area, and he's a comedian, Métis comedian. He calls himself Moccasin Joe, and him and I met each other just a few months back at a diabetes conference. And, and he says, what's your grandmother? His last name is Chapman. I says, you're kidding. I said, my grandmother's name is Chapman. And he said, what's your grandmother's name? And I said, Jesse. He goes, oh, I know her. Like, how did you know? How would you know her? Like, he's just saying that because everybody knew their cousins. Everybody knew their family.
Yeah.
They try to keep it going. They try to keep it alive.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
and
it's funny because
this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep our heritage alive. We're trying to keep,
Derek,
not to lose it.
Derek, I got to
tell people.
Oh, we're coming to our time here. I just want you to briefly answer this question. What's your personal achievement? What's your hope and your personality to be the counselor? What do you want to do to eventually achieve the things? And just make it really brief, and then
right now, what I want to achieve is try to help as many people as possible that need that help. And, whether you count them one-on-one or count them groups, everybody's an individual. They're all different. But it's important that we need counselors that travel across Canada. And United States also needs that recognition now. The United States also, their president also needs to apologize from their country for our other brothers and sisters that are in the U.S. And it's their time. It's their time now to step forward over this.
Yeah. Well, Derek, I really appreciate this. Listen, I'd like to. I want you to come back on the program in the future. I'm going to ask you to come back in a couple months to see, and I want you to give us a sort of like a report of what's going on. But our time has come to the end, and. And thank you, Joanne, for phoning in and telling us your stories. This has been a great program. Thanks, Derek. Our time is coming to close, and I would like to thank you very much for being our guest on Métis Voices Radio program. It's been a pleasure to have you here as always. Go ahead, Derek.
I always like to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, there you go. I also would like to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, and our directors and sponsors of the BBS radio station for allowing us to present this program to you each week. Please send feedback about our Métis Voices radio show located on the BBS radio homepage. Call them on the left-hand side, and also be sure to visit the museum website at www.métismuseum.org and join us on our community site, métismuseum.ning.com. Next week, Friday, July 11th, Nadine Gagné will be our guest on the Métis Voices radio program. We look forward to chatting with her. Please stay tuned next week, same time starting 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a good week and take care. Until then, merci.
Merci.